The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Ellen Road podcast. Leeds are on a roll in 2024. Four wins on the spin, no sign of letting up, despite Preston's best efforts to injure just about everybody at Ellen Road on Sunday lunchtime, including those in the front row. Daniel Farke's side truly are the comeback kings this season, and I think that was Dan James's third header of the season, which is just remarkable in itself. Farke described the 2-1 win over Preston as the most satisfying kinds of victories and potentially season-defining. How would you describe it, Graham?
Totally unjust. I felt that Preston more than matched Leeds in terms of chances created, in terms of possession, territory, and, you know, hit the woodwork three or four times. Mellier's, you know, his game of his life, really. Two disallowed goals, three penalties that should have been. I really don't know how anyone at Thorpe Arch could sleep on Sunday night. Robbery, daylight robbery.
Right. Well, you have to be careful here because, as we know, there's a few people who listen to this podcast when they're out on a run or maybe working out in the gym or something. You've just sent an absolute spike in their heart rate there. they are going to be incensed by what you just had to say. Obviously, well, and it is my responsibility to say Graham is obviously speaking in jest.
No.
Go on.
No, I woke up today and decided to live a day in the life of Ryan Lowe. So I'm seeing the world through his eyes. I've been absolutely outraged at the driving of everybody else on the M1 on my way back from Thorpe Arch. Heard things that weren't said during the press conference. I like it, to be honest. I quite like it.
Yeah, you have just been up to Thorpe Arch to speak with Daniel Farke and chew the fat with the rest of the Leeds United journalists today. We'll get on to what Daniel Farke had to say in that press conference later on. But I think we probably should dissect the Preston win, the fourth win in a row. Obviously, it was a little bit of a closer run thing than the other three by a 3-0 scoreline. But ultimately, they got the job done. It was a bad day for Ryan Ledson, who committed a WWE-style takedown on Ilya Gruev after coming onto the pitch, then gave away a penalty. And then tried to protest to the referee that he said his arms were by his side, which I'm afraid with the number of cameras that are trained on football players these days, he was never, ever going to convince the referee of. You had Di Cornell, the Preston goalkeeper, trying to put Joel Pirro off at the spot kick. You could see him sort of mouthing something or shouting at him. We also had a special guest at halftime with Luke Humphreys parading an enormous trophy around Ellen Road. So where do you want to begin, Graham?
I read some quotes from Di Cornell after the game that he was taking a load of stick during the game that he normally quite enjoys. But he said that I think maybe his partner or wife and all of her family are from Leeds and are Leeds fans. So he reckoned that it was them giving him grief. So I just wonder if he said to Pirro, "Can I have your shirt?" so that he could give it to his father-in-law and carry some favour. What a game it was. A very different game to the 3-0ers. And I think it arguably bodes better for Leeds that they won that game than, you know, the Birmingham game, for example, or even the Cardiff game. Because Birmingham and Cardiff were both absolute tripe. And Preston are not tripe. Now, they're not quite my cup of tea, I'll be honest. I don't think I'd be overwhelmed with joy watching that week in and week out. But they have very, very solid championship players, don't they? And they are a physical unit. They cause you problems from set pieces. They make it a battle, a really nasty game. And it's just, I think it's, Leeds have come through a more difficult test. I think it's probably the most difficult test they've had since Boxing Day. Although actually maybe Carlos Corberan would have something to say about that, but it's just a really difficult game against Preston. It is like the archetypal championship game that will put a dent in your run or your winning streak, because Preston can show up and play like that and make it horrible and ugly. And the wind didn't help as well. And, you know, they, let's be honest, there were points in the second half where Leeds weren't scoring the second goal when everyone in that stadium was thinking, I could see Preston scoring from either a counter or swirling a great big deep free kick into the area and one of their big galoots getting up and heading it into the top corner. Everyone could see that in their mind's eye. So for Leeds to control the game the way they did, didn't give Preston a sniff in the second half, not really, and created danger and just kept plugging away and persisting. Didn't really get swept up too much in the argy-bargy, the archy-bargy, should I say.
There was a bit of that, yeah.
He let himself get wound up a bit. That was a naughty one as well, you know, because they were...
It was, yeah.
By the time he was shoulder barged, they were crossing. If not crossing, they had crossed the touchline. And so to give a player a shove at that point is basically saying, I'm going to put you in the stand or into the advertising boards. Bit of a naughty one. So I could see why he was so annoyed. And actually, I quite liked that he had a real go, you know, and that he wanted to have a real go. And he didn't really stop having a go. I can also see why Farke was saying, don't play into their hands, think about the time, because you don't know that the referee is going to add it all on. And obviously then with the goal kick, Di Cornell, I think he mentally listed every footballer he's ever been aware of in his head before taking that goal kick. So I could understand both sides of it, but Leeds generally didn't get too swept up, and they didn't let it turn into a complete scrap. And ultimately, regardless of what Ryan Lowe might have seen, Leeds deserved to win that game.
They did. And I mean, Lowe, I think he mentioned it in his Sky interview afterwards. He was talking about expected goals and how if you took Leeds' penalty away, then they were pretty much level and it was an even game. I disagree with that slightly, considering that the Will Keane chance that they scored from in the opening, you know, 66 seconds or whatever it was, that was quite a high value chance. They put that away. And then for the rest of the game, they only generated, I think it was around 0.3 XG. So, I mean, you know what, Ryan Lowe, if you're happy generating 0.3 XG in 89 minutes, then absolutely crack on. But Leeds, on the other hand, even without their penalty, created 1.75 XG, which is just around their season average. So I think you have to say that, yeah, it was a fair result in the end. Yes, Leeds did benefit from getting a penalty, but it was a penalty all day long. And I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what will have been discussed when Lowe went into the referee David Webb's changing room at the end, because he said he was going to do that. Very Hardman-esque, wasn't it? It was a very Guy Ritchie film. Yeah. I'm going to go and have a chat with him. What's that documentary from years ago? Is it Stephen French, the very renowned hard man from Liverpool? And he sort of goes into a gym and he's like, "You're not going to be dealing in my gym." Felt very...
No, that wasn't Stephen French. Oh, that's going to really annoy me for the rest of the...
I'm sure someone listening will know what I'm on about, though.
Yeah, he was like a debt collector, wasn't he? And he would go and sort out things that perhaps you couldn't get sorted out by other more conventional means. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, when Ryan Lowe was... I came into his press conference late because we'd been whisked away to go and speak to Joe Rodon in a corner of a corridor. And when we came back, Lowe was kind of already well into his presser. So we were stood at the side and we weren't kind of in the seats and didn't really feel like I could interject from where we were. But not that I was planning on going, excuse me, no, incorrect.
Some would say you bottled it, but, you know, we'll leave that to those who might say that, not me.
There was no mention of the fact that Di Cornell handled the ball. It looked like he certainly handled the ball to me outside of his area, which wasn't seen. The tackle on Gruev, as you would say, he was probably lucky to stay on the pitch for that tackle, but genuinely in this case, because...
Yeah, yeah.
I was saying, me and somebody, it was one of the photographers, was showing me a picture and it was full leg extension, studs up. There was no intention to get the ball. That was a I'm just going to take him out because he's breaking through here. Now, if you and I, Joe, are on opposition in the opposition, right, and I just turn around and kick you very hard in the calf, that's a red card for violent conduct because I have there's no ball there to be won. I've just decided to kick you. What's the difference?
Are you acting out your fantasies here?
what's the difference between just turning around and volleying somebody in the calf and sliding with full extension with your boot up? Just because the ball is in play doesn't mean it's a tackle. And for me, I would have been absolutely fine with the referee giving a red for that.
I think it could have been, it could have easily been a red card. It certainly was an orange for me. There was another one as well, which was very, very suspicious. It was Ali McCann on Dan James near the touchline, where he kind of just goes, you know what, the ball is gone, I'm just going to take you, and kind of wrestles him, almost like gets him in a headlock as he's sort of taking him down. And fair play to Dan James, doesn't rise to it. Certainly something which will have pleased Daniel Farke. Doesn't rise to it, and just cracks on with it, gets the free kick. But yeah, Preston, I think I saw a statistic from Johnny Cooper at Opta after the game, and it was 40 fouls they committed against Leeds over the two fixtures, which is the most by any team in, I can't remember exactly, but a certain set period of time. It's a lot of fouls, and it's very much if you can't beat them, then just try and stop them.
And it's far more than their average against other opponents as well.
Yes.
It's something like double the average of their fouls conceded against other opponents. Ironic, I suppose, then, that the penalty in stoppage time, after a number of penalty shouts, has to be said, that some were more spurious than others. Looking at you, Sam Byram. The penalty came not for a foul, but for a handball. And that was the other thing that I found interesting about Lowe. He sent his team out to be very, very physical. They were kind of grappling all afternoon. And then Joe Rodon goes in for what looked to me just like a 50-50 battle of strength in the air, wins it. The Preston player falls over and Lowe says, that's a foul. And then, you know, it's a foul and it's not a handball. I saw it completely differently to him. And then talk about a spike in the blood pressure. That whole sequence where Patrick Bamford has the football and Joe Rodon is over by the bench and is then absolutely races, like probably his most high intensity sprint of the season, races to the edge of the area, screaming and pointing to Joel Pirou. It was obvious, I think, that Daniel Farke wasn't quite certain if the person that he wanted to take the penalty was going to take the penalty. And he admitted to us afterwards that his message was, Joel will take this penalty. I don't know. It'd be nice to ask Bamford at some stage, were you intending to take that? Or were you simply holding the ball and waiting for all the fuss to die down so that you could then give it to Somerville or give it to Peru? Or was he actually thinking, you know what, I've scored 3-3. I might as well get another one here. Might as well make it 4-4, just to make things interesting. I'm not quite sure what the intention was, but it certainly at least meant that Peru, who was only just on the pitch really as a substitute, was not, you know, was unbothered, unfussed by Cornell and his antics before it was taken.
Do you think that Cornell was maybe repeating what was said by the Millwall fans in Berrin's video at the beginning of the season to try and put Peru off? That would have been very funny and quite hypocritical, actually, to look at Di Cornell. I think the answer that that Daniel Farke gave in his post-match press conference, you know, Joel is our penalty taker, is a very very measured response. I'm not sure whether he will have said that in exactly the same terms to Joe Rodon. I'm not sure that anyone else in the ground would have said that when they saw Patrick Bamford pick up the ball. I think it would have been, spectators would have maybe been saying something which was a bit more expletive laden, to say the least.
And that's not doing Bamford a disservice necessarily. I think there's a lot of people who would be thinking, please, Patrick, don't take this for your own sake. Because I think the last thing he needs is a knock to his confidence, because he's literally only just got himself back fully fit, firing again, scoring goals. The last thing you want to do is jeopardize that or to, you know, make him the story at the end of that game. Because if Somerville misses that, yes, then there's a narrative of him missing two spot kicks in a row, but he's got so much credit in the bank and he's been absolutely flying this season. And he's also the kind of character that I don't think he'd lose any sleep if a few people on the internet were saying you can't take penalties. I think it was just better all round that Peru took it and he scored it. So that kind of ends the argument, doesn't it? Wasn't particularly the cleanest strike that he'll hit, because he is a very, very, very good ball striker, but it was enough. And then Elland Road just absolutely erupted, didn't it?
Mm. We've had a lot of them this season. A lot of occasions where, as well, Leeds have come from behind. I mentioned in my intro that they're sort of the comeback kings this season. And I do believe it's more points than any other team from losing positions that Leeds have gained. So, it shows the mettle that this team have. It shows the mentality and that, yes, even though they are a young, inexperienced squad, certainly in title charges and battling at the top of tables, they don't know when they're beat, which is very good going into the sort of the last third of the season, which we're beginning to enter now. You mentioned in there about speaking to Joe Roden at the end. How did he come across in his post match interview with you, Graham?
Fine, yeah. He was you could tell there was an edge to it, because that came across in what he was saying. You know, he said it was a very frustrating game. He mentioned their time wasting, and he wasn't afraid to say that they didn't like it, what happened at Preston. That really did not sit well. And I think Leeds have done quite a good job of hiding just how rattled they were by what happened at Deepdale, because it hasn't really been mentioned, has it? You know, that the fact that, in fact, it was the first, I think we were aware of how annoyed they were at the celebrations, you know, the Preston celebrations and the scale of those, which maybe shows why Leeds players reacted the way they did for that winning penalty. You know, they really went to town with the celebrations. I was a bit disappointed that we didn't have a little bit of Archie Bargy at full time, because myself and Leon Wobshall, who's a veteran journalist at the YP, we'd been saying as the game was winding towards a close, you could see this kicking off at full time, rubbing my little hands together in the press box, looking forward to scenes that absolutely everybody wants to see. But there was niggle in it. There was real niggle in it. And Rodon wasn't afraid to kind of address that. He didn't want to tell me what the message was from Farke, but luckily we got that out of Farke quite easily. And he just reiterated how much fun he's having at Leeds. You can see, though, like, you don't need him to say that. You know, that the celebration of the goal kick in the 97th minute or whatever it was, when he shepherds the ball behind and just roars into the faces of those in the south stand, like, that is a player who is absolutely all in. You know, you can sometimes wonder about the commitment of a lone player. You know, they can be perfectly professional and they can play well, but you wonder, like, how much does it really mean to them if Leeds go up or don't go up? You know, when they're on X amount of tens of thousands per week, they know they've got a job waiting for them back at a parent club. You know, if Leeds don't go up, they won't have to suffer the consequences next year. But Rodon looks to me like somebody who would be absolutely devastated if this didn't end in promotion. Like, he just looks invested.
He's a real competitor, isn't he? I think that's the way to put it, which I can understand why you didn't try and physically strong arm him into signing a contract after you'd finished interviewing him. I know you've met him a couple of times now. You've had the opportunity, so you're kind of letting down the readership of the YEP and the listenership that you've not, put the piece of paper in front of him. Maybe done Greta and Nick Hammond's job for them, and got him to sign on the dotted line. But you know what? I'm sure you'll have more opportunities between now and the end of the season. Consider it as homework, maybe. Consider it as a little personal task.
From you know me what? To you. I'm going to say something wildly unpopular here. Firstly, I understand completely why Leeds are not rushing into making this a permanent deal in January, because if you are up against it for profit and sustainability, then why would you spend a huge amount of money on a player who's going to be your player till the end of the season anyway? It just wouldn't make sense, particularly when you've got other areas to address. I don't see why you would do that. Lots of people are talking about the Ben White thing, and we should have, you know, Leeds should have got Ben White tied down in the January. That was never going to happen. It's a completely different situation. Brighton were never, ever, ever going to let him sign permanently for Leeds or sell him, because they knew they had a £50 million player on their hands who was, you know, he was developing in such a way at Leeds that season that the season was ending in a crescendo. He was always going to come out of that season with a huge value. And actually their plan was let him go on loan to League Two, to Newport, let him go to Peterborough, let him go to Leeds in the Championship, let him work his way up, and then he'll play for us next season in the Premier League, and then we'll sell him. And it worked an absolute treat. Joe Rodon is 5 years older than Ben White was when he was at Leeds. I don't think he's on the same trajectory that Ben White was at that stage. And given the amount of money that Tottenham are probably going to ask for a British player this summer, I don't know that Leeds would necessarily rush into the decision right now. Now, I know Farke says he wants him to stay longer, but if you go up, do you automatically, on the first day of the transfer window, press go on that transfer and give Tottenham whatever they ask for? Or do you take a step back and say, yes, he was very, very solid in the Championship. Now let's look at whether we think he can be just as solid in the Premier League. Because I think there's a discussion to be had there, because he hasn't yet proven himself at the top level.
No, he hasn't. And there's also the argument that, you know, actually we've dug around in the sofa, we found the receipt for Jed Spence, so we'll have our loan fee back as well. so yeah, no, I completely agree. All joking aside, I think you're right. You have to be smart, don't you? I mean, even today, Daniel Farke was talking about, you know, young players and how they can be useful to Leeds in several ways in future. You know, whether that's in the first team or use them in a business sense. And, you know, sometimes you do have to be pragmatic when it comes to that sort of thing. So, I think the Rodon situation is one which isn't going to go away because of how well he's playing and how everybody wants him to stay, but is one which won't be resolved until the summer. So park it, everyone. Just park it, right? Just fark it.
Careful. And I should say at the end of all that, he's in the running for player of the season. I mean, he's a top candidate for player of the season, because to my mind, the only real errors I can recall are when he got done for the red card and he got sent off with those two yellows, a little bit of naivety there. There's been once or twice that I probably wouldn't have picked out as errors, but Farke has, where he's not expected the worst in Farke's terminology, and he's let himself get beaten because he's either stepped forward or he's dribbled with the ball or whatever. But beyond that, he's been really, really good, really solid, really consistent, and really reliable. And I tell you what, the idea of Pascal Struyck getting injured and being out for a month or a couple of months was previously a very, very scary one for Leeds, because Liam Cooper's had his injury issues this season, and you're not sure that you could rely on him to play Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday. So there would have been a problem at defence. But Ethan Ampadu, not only the way he's slotted in, but the way that Gruev has then slotted into the midfield, has just made all that worry go away.
Yeah, you're right. It's showing that, you know, while Farke says he's a big friend, I love that term, that's a very good Farkeism. He's a big friend of playing players in their best position. It shows that this squad does actually have versatility to basically not drop the floor of this team whenever there are key players out. So very positive. He did say some other stuff on Pascal today, didn't he, Daniel Farke? And as well, maybe a little hint that they would possibly look at dipping into the market for a central defender if that issue with Pascal continues to plague him, and as well depending on the Charlie Creswell topic.
Yeah, we didn't really ask him about Creswell today because I don't think we were expecting a different answer. Mm. Ultimately, what you can take from Creswell not being in the squad at the weekend and from Farke still talking about it being a topic that needs to be resolved, you can take from that Creswell hasn't come to him and said, I'm willing to play fourth fiddle, and I'm going to fight and I'm going to train as hard as I can and I'm going to try and prove you wrong, but I accept my role and I'm all in, you know, I'm fully focused, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that conversation hasn't happened, or Farke isn't convinced that that's going to be the case, because he hasn't put him in the squad yet and he hasn't used him and he hasn't gone anywhere either. So that is obviously still one that's bubbling away. And the longer it goes on into the window, if you were a player, right, and your manager had said that stuff about you in a press conference, and essentially the message was, come to me and tell me you're going to accept your role, but you're going to fight to improve it, or you know, go away. When would you go in and say, if your intention was to accept his words and then try and prove him wrong, when would you go in to the office? Would it be the next day? Would it be the very next day? Would you leave it a couple of days so that it could make it look like you've had a think about it? If it hasn't happened by now, is it going to happen? You know, because we're 8 days away from the end of the window, or does it now look as if options are being explored in order to, you know, find a way out?
I'd go to my agent and I'd see if there was any concrete interest and maybe try and make something happen first and foremost.
I bet you would.
Right, I would, yeah.
Always out for what you can get.
No loyalty in football, Graham. You should know that better than anyone.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I was going to say
how,
that about...
How are Worksop Town doing, eh? How are Chesterfield doing, yeah?
Well, Chesterfield are flying, top of the league by a long, long way. Just got Armando Dobra on a longer contract, which is massive boost for the club. Worksop also doing very, very well in their division after a promotion, I'll have you know. And they just had James Hansen retire, which was quite a blow. Yeah, back to Rodon. You say there's no loyalty in football. Say they sign Rodon, right? All the people, if you could gather up all the people who have said and screamed for Rodon to be made a permanent signing, we have to get him, we have to get him, and then train cameras on them next season, how many mistakes do you think he'd have to make in the Premier League before they would be caught saying, he's not good enough, that Rodon, not good enough?
Well, I don't know how to put this diplomatically.
We're all very fickle beasts.
Well, yeah, we know the tendency for football fans to flip flop on their opinions.
I am just as bad. I mean, I'm every bit as bad, because there are players that I was really excited about. I can think of a player in particular who went to my club and I asked you specifically, is he going to be good? And you assured me that yes, he would be. He's been absolute trash, and he's already on loan to another club.
You know what? I'm not having this. And you know for a fact. I can find that conversation.
Oh, you always keep the receipts, don't you? Always keep.
Do
the
right,
receipts.
I do. Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. There. Here we go. Perfect. Honestly, can't say I've watched him in a good 4 years.
Right. Well, maybe it was a different conversation.
So maybe I said I didn't really know him. You know, it's okay to admit when you don't know something, Graham. Really okay with that.
It isn't. So the Creswell situation is still there. Strike is not back yet. And the initial expectation was this is a minor setback. It's a trifling matter. How did Bielsa describe Pablo Hernandez's groin? It's a small thing. And yet it hasn't been a small thing, and he's still out. And whilst Leeds haven't really missed a beat without him, thanks to Ampadu and Gruev and Rodon and co, it is a worry. It is now a worry, because you are then, say this goes on, rumbles on for another 4 weeks or another 6 weeks, say Ampadu picks up a knock or gets suspended, then you're in a bit of bother. So it feels like it would be prudent to be down the line with a centre back just in case, and then make that call. I mean, we are now on the 23rd of January. We've got till the 1st of February, haven't we? So 9 days, something like that. And that's plenty of time, isn't it? You could sign a player every day between now and then and sign 9 players. But the important bit is that Leeds need to know there is someone that they can go and get, not someone that they might be able to go and get, but a deal that can be done. And for me, like we said last week, yeah, they'll almost inevitably finish in the playoff spots, regardless of whether they sign someone or not. But given that the top two is still available, given that you know, Ipswich's run of draws has made that second spot tantalizingly close to within Leeds' grasp, why don't you just go balls to the wall, get your left back, get your right back, get your centre back, convince them that, yeah, there might be an opportunity to play here, even if maybe there won't be, and just get your insurance.
Language, balls to the wall, won't be having that. I tell you who Daniel Farke probably has considered, but it's a bit difficult to get that one done. Ben Godfrey, he's hardly played for Everton this season. You'd imagine that considering their history together with Norwich, that Farke might consider him as someone who can play right back, can play centre back. But, I mean, I suppose that's the issue when you've previously, how to put this, you've told on Everton for their FFP breaches. You've co-signed a letter saying, sorry, that shouldn't be allowed after you've been relegated or at least intimated to do so. So I can't see Everton wanting to do any business with Leeds, well, especially with the Nonto thing.
They've also given them one of their players of the season, haven't they, in terms of a peace offering in Jack Harrison. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Also, you find in the past that, for instance, take Red Bull. Leeds and Red Bull had their big to-do over Jean-Kevin Augustin, and then still did loads of business, didn't they? You know, they did loads of business with them. I mean, we'll not talk about...
Hang on. Who did they sign?
Okay. So maybe Red Bull were exacting a measure of revenge, but the business was we're playing the long game here. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make them think we're friends and we'll give them this lot. But I think business could still be done with a club like Everton, even if there's been some difficulties, shall we say, of an off-field nature. I guess the big problem is convincing someone like Ben Godfrey that he's actually going to play if he comes here. Because is he going to get in ahead of Rodon? It seems very, very unlikely. Is Farke suddenly going to go off the idea of Archie Gray again?
Should I tell you what I could see him doing?
Oh, this sounds good. Go on.
This sounds tactical, doesn't it?
Pieces of the puzzle moving around.
mathematical equations going on around my head. I could see him... Hypothetically, I could maybe see him using Ben Godfrey as sort of like a third centre back at right back, and allowing whoever it is on the left, a Firpo or a Byram, to push on, in the way that, you know, we've seen Leicester do in the sort of the inverse with Enzo Maresca has put Wout Faz as his left back, who is by all intents and purposes centre half, and then Ricardo Pereira has gone into midfield, so there's been an extra body in there. And when they've been in possession, I don't know. Hey, that's just me. You know, if there's a vacancy on Daniel Farke's backroom staff, who knows?
Interesting, just to get a little trip inside your mind palace there and see how it works.
It's not a mind palace; it's a mind hovel.
It's not too dissimilar, to be honest, to what we've seen from Leeds at times this season. You know, we saw one of the first things we noticed about Farke ball was Archie Gray, a centre midfielder, dropping in and being essentially a right back, you know, in the right back position, while Luke Ayling went and played like a second winger up the right. Mm-hmm. So we have seen that this season, just in a different iteration, I suppose. But I think the lesson we've learned in recent weeks is just because somebody doesn't look like they're getting in the team right now, doesn't mean they won't get in the team and shine. Because look at Gruev, you know, he's had to be more patient than most, and yet eventually he's got his chance. Look at Patrick Bamford. There's no way we'd have predicted Patrick Bamford coming in to play that pivotal role. Say 3 weeks before Christmas, if somebody had suggested that, you'd have thought, nah, he's not getting in ahead of Peru. He's not getting in ahead of Jorginho. It's not happening. And yet look now, you know, these situations develop, form fluctuates, injuries happen. So maybe that's the pitch to players coming in, that you'll say, look, you are going to have to compete with Archie Gray to play at right back. You are going to have to compete with Rodon to play right-sided centre-back. But look at what's happened this season. Look at Dan James keeping Willy Nyonto out the team. You know, there are very few nailed down positions for the entirety of a season. You know, Ampadu's probably the only one who's really got a chance of doing it, you know, being ever-present. He is, isn't he?
Because the other two, the only other two were Strike and Melier.
Yeah, and Melier lamped someone, and Strike has hurt himself. So, yeah, let's see what they do, but do something. You know, definitely do something. Staying awake is all well and good, but you got to get up a bit out of bed, haven't you? You got to get yourself a shower, get yourself downstairs, have some breakfast, sign a left back at least, maybe a right back as well.
How are you staying awake for this podcast? There's been no yawns today.
I've nearly said PEDs then. PEDs in the form of a can of one of your popular energy drinks, which I don't normally drink, but it seems to have done the trick so far.
Well, I mean, you've already mentioned it inadvertently on this episode when referring to a couple of football teams that Leeds had off-field discussions with. Actually, do you want to tell the listeners and the viewers what it was that you were drinking before we started recording? Because I heard the cracking of a can, and I thought, bloody hell, Graham, it's a work day. It's a bit early. And then you held them up to the...
I won't hold them up because we don't want product placement. And I don't think that anyone else will find this weird, but I'm a big fan of tins of Mandarin segments in juice. And obviously the juice comes right to the top of the can, so you have to drink the juice before you can access the Mandarin segments. It's one of your five a day, Joe. You should consider a bit of fruit and veg now and again.
Are you preparing for the end of the world? That you've got, you've just got tins of mandarins stacked to the rafters.
Who in the Leeds United squad, given that Farker today was talking about, you know, Cree Somerville is a different character to Liam Cooper, that made me laugh, that inside, yeah. Internally. And Jorginho is different to Ilya Gruev. Who do you think the prepper in the squad is? Who do you think is prepping for the end of the world, not trusting the tap water? Who do you think's got cans and cans and cans in a larder at home for the end of the world?
Very good question. I couldn't see it really being any of the younger lads, and I know that this squad is quite young. Can't see them having sort of existential crises. So it'd probably be after one of the older heads,
or
a Carl Darlow maybe,
or would it be Daniel Farke always expecting the worst, like he wants. Or has Joe Rodon taken his manager's words to heart so intently that he's now expecting the worst in every situation in his life?
I'll tell you what's a better question than who's the Leeds United end of the world hoarder. Is on the back of Luke Humphreys doing his lap of Ellen Road, who do you think's the best in the Leeds squad at the old Arrows?
Joffy, I would imagine, who has played. He just strikes me as the kind of fellow who's played a lot of darts in his time.
You're trying to say he was brought up in a pub?
No, I'm just saying. He's the kind of earthy northern character who you mm-hmm. could see having a dartboard in the garage or in his room. You know, when he wasn't out kicking a football, which was probably most of the time, you could see him chucking darts. You don't like to stereotype, but I imagine Sam Greenwood's possibly in the same boat. You know,
I was going to say Sam Greenwood was right on the cusp of my tongue there.
I know he's a big fan of boxing. I wouldn't be surprised if he loved the darts as well.
Because we saw James Maddison, this Spurs midfielder. He was at the Ali Pali for the final, wasn't he? Between Humphreys and Luke Littler, who makes Archie Gray appear a veteran. So it is a sport which I think you definitely get a lot of the British lads following. Maybe a few of the Dutch lads as well. Imagine that, if Strike, Somerville and Pirou were all really into the darts. Like, one of them's a massive Michael van Gerwen head. Another one's a huge... Van Barneveld fan. Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
It would be fantastic. What I enjoyed about Luke Humphreys' walk around the pitch, his dream walk around the pitch, was how quickly the dream turned into a nightmare, because that trophy is about the size of one Joe Gelhardt, and he had to carry it all the way around the Elland Road pitch. And it looked to me like his arms were absolutely burnt out by the end of it. And then at the end, he had to do the Farker wave towards the south stand with the trophy. I could just see his biceps straining. What I could see was Luke Humphreys out for the season with a tricep tear. That trophy was absolutely enormous. I also liked that he managed to interrupt the Preston subs as they were warming up, because he was walking down the touchline and he got in their way. I also enjoyed how animated they were when they saw him. They were like, look, that's that guy off the TV from the darts, which just shows that footballers can be, you know, can have normal reactions to stuff like the rest of us. But that was quite good. Well worthy of a parade around the pitch, I thought. There are those who are worthy of a parade around the pitch. And if you win a world title in your sport and you're world number one, then I think you've got every right to carry the trophy around your home ground.
Yeah, Leeds United Kings of Europe, Luke Humphreys carrying the... I can't get over that. It's the most Leeds thing in the world, isn't it? That's what he was named after, that acronym. Yeah, carrying that trophy around. I think, yeah, you're probably right with Joffy. I'm trying to think if there's anyone who would just be completely hopeless. I could see maybe Georgie's long limbs being completely useless. He's not really getting the hang of it. They don't really play darts in Italy, do they? Willie Nonto, yeah. Probably not getting that.
Footballers are disgustingly competitive and disgustingly natural at things, though. That's the horrible thing, that you find that they're really good at stuff. Like, they'll try their hand at golf and be really good at golf. Or they'll play billiards and be a fantastic billiards player. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're all very, very good at darts. It would annoy me.
What year is it? Which squad is this that we're talking about? The 1990-91 title-winning squad?
Bobby Collins, absolutely phenomenal billiards player, I would imagine.
Yeah. Look, we're getting off track here. We're getting off piece a little bit. Let's get back to Leeds United matters. Sort of on the pitch, sort of off the pitch. A few contract stories over the past week or so. Obviously, we covered Archie's new deal on last week's episode. Since then, we've had Matteo Joseph sign a new contract, also long-term, also until 2028. And Daniel Farke spoke about that today. And as well, there's obviously reports that Willie Nyonto is sort of on the cusp, or rather has reached an agreement, or is close to reaching an agreement over a new contract at Elland Road. What do you make of those two bits of business, or one hypothetical and one confirmed?
Joseph seems like sensible business. He has seen off Perkins, really, hasn't he? Because they came in together, they both scored a lot of goals for the 21s, and then one of them kicked on to be a part of the first team and to stay a part of the first team. And he obviously is not getting huge minutes, but he's getting minutes. And one was farmed out on loan, and it just hasn't happened for him at all. So it just feels like good business. You know, Joseph has real potential. I'd really like to see him score a goal. I really don't like to see him jump into players in the 98th minute on the touchline, giving Preston a chance to wing the ball into the box one more time. That was a little bit of the impetuousness of youth, I think, in that challenge. But yeah, I'd like to see more of him. But it's difficult, isn't it? You know that.
Yeah.
He's not going to start right now. Maybe he'll get a little bit more involvement against Plymouth at the weekend. Be nice to see him get like half an hour or even 45 or something like that, and get a chance, because in the games when he's come on, it's been like energy, it's been trying to hold the ball up, it's been trying to win free kicks and throw-ins. I can't remember him having too much in the way of like an opportunity to go and score. So that would be, it'd be nice to see him get in some of those situations. And as for Nyonto, the club stance has always been, we're not selling Willie Nyonto. You know, they were so firm on that in the summer. And they were also very, very open to the idea of a new contract, because when he came in, Nyonto signed a contract that was probably reflective of his transfer value more so than his potential or the ability that he went on to show in the Premier League. So it would make sense for him to sign a deal on improved terms. And Leeds have always been very open to that. I can't quite recall if Nyonto has now actually changed agent from the one who guided him through that summer into that very public transfer request. But there was talk of changing agent. I can't remember if it's actually happened or not. But yeah, I think as long as Willie Nyonto had his head down in training, was doing his bit, and is happy to remain, then a new contract makes sense for everybody. And it also protects the club in terms of his value and in terms of this summer. It also probably puts to bed all this incessant talk about him leaving this month, because Leeds have had no intention of selling him this month.
No, absolutely not. And I agree with you there on both counts. I'd love to see Matteo Joseph score a goal, because his celebrations for the 21s last season were always great. So I can only imagine what his enthusiasm would be like scoring for the senior team, especially if it was a goal that mattered. So yeah, maybe see a bit more of him on Saturday against Plymouth. What else should we discuss? Obviously, last night we're recording on Tuesday after the press conference. Last night we saw Leicester draw 1-1 with Ipswich. Some very questionable goalkeeping for the Ipswich equaliser in the 90th minute. But I think I saw a lot of people going with the sort of the opinion that, oh, no, you know, Ipswich are never going to drop points. But, you know, that's very glass half empty, sorry. I think, you know, both teams dropped points there. And, you know, as long as Ipswich didn't win, I was very happy with whatever the outcome was.
Yeah. Leif Davis doing his bit again with an own goal. Relief Davis, more like, at full time. with that equaliser. I'll tell you what, there's going to be some big games, isn't there, between now and the end of the season. Like, it is an interesting, even though there's that big massive gap between Leeds and seventh, and there's the big massive gap between Leicester and Leeds.
Leeds in seventh?
No, Leeds and seventh.
All right, okay.
Big massive gap between
them. It sounded very suspicious, like you maybe had a momentary lapse. I've got to keep you in check.
No momentary lapse here. I'm wired to the moon. I'm completely on it, as Farker would say. On the moon, yeah. yeah, there are big gaps that take away certain elements of jeopardy or excitement, but there's definitely, like, that the race for second is going to be great. It's going to be really good, I think. And then the race for teams to get into the playoffs is going to be very, very good. There's going to be some massive games for Leeds. And regardless of how the very impressive Northern Irishman Kieran McKenna puts it, there is going to be pressure on Ipswich, because they're, you know, they've played themselves into a phenomenal position, and now they've got to try and hang on to it, you know, or finish it off. And
it does feel increasingly as though they're hanging on to it rather than holding off other teams, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that is definitely the case. And I hate to say, we told you so, but we have been telling you so, that it was very possible that they'd have a big wobble. And I think Leeds kind of kicked it off, didn't they, at Elland Road with that 4-0 drubbing. Just put a question mark in their heads. I mean, you can't take anything away from them at all as a newly promoted team. What they've done, the double bounce or whatever you want to call it, has been superb. And Wrexham doing a similar thing, aren't they? Taking all their momentum from winning a league and getting promoted and doing the same in the division above. But it'll be fascinating. And some games that I'm really looking forward to, like Leicester at Elland Road, will be fantastic. Southampton have still got to come as well.
Yeah, just the last game of the season.
Yeah, so games like that will, I think, bring the absolute best out of Elland Road. Because there have been times this season when it has been a bit flat. You know, there were times during the game on Sunday when it was a little bit flat. And it was only really when it started getting properly contentious and there was a bit more urgency in Leeds' play that Elland Road really got dragged back into the game and then played a full part. But you've got to think, when the likes of Leicester come and when Southampton come, that it'll just be, you know, hectic, absolutely hectic.
Well, speaking of wobbles and the like, there's a potential for a little bit of a psychological wobble for Southampton and Ipswich over the next couple of weeks, because before they next play their next championship fixture, Leeds play twice in the league, obviously against Norwich, and then on the Friday evening against Bristol City, the night before Ipswich play, I think it's Rotherham. No, Southampton play Rotherham and Ipswich play Preston, both away from home. So there's the potential that Leeds could actually go second before those two teams next kick a ball in the championship. So That's something to potentially watch out for, especially, well, only if Leeds defeat Norwich on Wednesday night. But, I mean, what an incentive that is, going to Ashton Gate on the Friday. You know, that's a real setter marker. I know that those teams will have games in hand as a result of Leeds playing twice before they next play. But like what Farker was saying today, you'd rather have your points on the board rather than a game in hand and thinking you've already won, because that's a surefire way to slipping up.
Yeah. And Leeds have already kind of botched an opportunity, haven't they? Because they beat Ipswich, and then they had their kind of Boxing Day hangover and the West Brom game. You know, you think where they'd be if they'd not slipped up with those two games. So with that lesson learned, I think they've got to have that in mind as they go into the Norwich game and think, we win this. You know, this is an absolute must-win game. Norwich, obviously no pushover, unbeaten in five themselves, three wins on the bounce. So it's two very, very informed teams. And it's a big, big game, isn't it? I suppose you could count it among the games where Elland Road will have a real part to play. Because you win this game and it's all on, isn't it? You know, you've properly put it on Ipswich and Southampton then.
Yeah, it's very much on. I just hope it's if they are to win, it's going to be a lot more straightforward than the last time Norwich came to Elland Road, because that was a hard stopper, wasn't it? With Joffe getting that late winner after Kenny McLean had sort of, I wouldn't even say rifled one into the bottom corner. He kind of strolled it in. But yeah, I suppose the other big Leeds United news, or former Leeds United player news, is that Calvin Phillips appears off to West Ham. What do you make of that? I mean, it's a bit meh, if you ask me.
Well, for me, the only real equation for Calvin Phillips and his camp was, where is he going to play? Like, where is he actually going to go in and play? And I suppose there's a slight irony in that he's going in to play the position of his good friend and erstwhile England teammate and midfield partner, Declan Rice. You know, maybe slightly a bit too late for West Ham. Probably could have done with him in the summer, coming into play from the start of the season. But wherever he was going to go, some of the teams that were being bandied around, you were thinking, really? Like when you heard a report that Barcelona were talking about it, did you think for one second, yeah, that makes a lot of sense? Like, where he goes, he can't sit on the bench. If he wants to play in the Euros, he's going to have a stellar second half of the season. And he's going to have to play himself into Southgate's plans. Now, Southgate absolutely loves him to bits, as we've seen over the past few years, but game time is just massive for him. So, yeah, while West Ham's maybe not as attractive as a Newcastle might have been, you know, it's probably game time, isn't it? It's probably minutes.
I mean, it is. I'd suggest there is a club in the Northeast who, with one midfield player now looking out for the season, as well as another midfield player out for the season with a gambling ban, and a 17-year-old pretty much playing every available minute in midfield. That team may have been a better option, but I suppose not being willing to pay Man City's loan fee demands has probably scuppered that move. But West Ham clearly are. You were talking there about Barcelona potentially being linked. I thought, when I saw the Juventus link, I thought, why on earth would Juventus need Calvin Phillips? They've got Weston McKennie.
You know, I saw Weston McKennie setting up a goal this week, big header at the back post that was going in, I think, and then somebody else put it in. And I thought to myself, it is utterly remarkable that he's having a season that's earning plaudits in Serie A. He's playing all the time. He's involved in stuff. It's good stuff. Where was he? You know, where was that player last season when Leeds really needed him? And yeah, that you can talk about being in a struggling team, but increasingly I find myself thinking that really good players make things happen. You know, like Rafinha played in a struggling Leeds team and he made stuff happen. He made that Joffe goal happen, didn't he? Joffe won the big header, but then Rafa had to take it on, go around the keeper and pull it back for him. You know, you need your the best players are talismanic, even in struggling teams. And McKennie wasn't that in the slightest for Leeds, but appears to have rediscovered himself or something, or transformed himself this season at Juve. It would have been a bit mad, really, had Phillips gone there. I really would have liked him. I would have liked him to have gone there if he would play, because that would be a fascinating move, great experience, life experience for him, and something a bit different. I just don't know if he, being as much of a family man and as kind of close to his family as he is, I don't know if I could see him going abroad.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I think it was always likely to be Premier League and always likely to be that tranche of teams sort of below the big six that he was going to go to. Before we finish, just a quick prediction for the Norwich game and also Plymouth in the Cup, because we won't be recording a podcast till next week. Obviously, this is a two fixture week. What do you think the scores are going to be at Elland Road in this triple header?
I'm going to say that they beat Norwich 1-0. I think they'll return to the clean sheets, and I think they'll win it with a goal from Patrick Bamford.
Interesting.
And it'll probably be a header, I would imagine, from a Dan James cross. And then, what's your prediction?
Well, I was going to say, I wouldn't back you as a tipster in a past life, because Norwich have scored 46 and conceded 43. So that's 89 goals total in 28 games. So 1-0. Look, I'm just going to say it's unlikely. I think it's more likely to be a 2-1 or a 2-2 in Leeds' favour. I'm going to go with...
A 2-2 in Leeds' favour?
No, you know what I meant. A 2-1. Don't be pedantic.
And then in the FA Cup... In the FA Cup, I'm going to say, I don't even want to say it. I was going to say 1-1 as a joke, because it's literally the worst thing possible. You know, can you imagine for 1 second, right? Let me set the scene. It's 2-1 to Leeds in the 89th minute, and Plymouth get a free kick, and somebody whips it into the top corner. And imagine how everyone will feel knowing that we've got a midweek trip to Plymouth in the same month that we've got an early Saturday morning trip to Plymouth.
No, I'm not entertaining it. I'll run on the pitch. Like, you know, that comedian, Simon Brodkin, who's his footballer alter ego.
I don't know.
Jason Bent. That's who it is. I'll run on, I'll put a Leeds shirt on, and I'll score an own goal to ensure that doesn't happen. And I'll be roundly cheered by everyone. I'll be the one. Did you see, actually, after the Pirro penalty was scored, I think it was Dan James went and hugged one of the pitch side stewards at Elland Road with sort of runner on his back. I'll be the one hugging the runner.
That steward, I believe, was the steward who delivered the Leeds fan his chicken tenders or whatever they were, in that recent story we had about the food that was available in the East Stand, but not the West. And the steward marched around the pitch with the food hot from the vendor and delivered it to Punjabi whites. Always on the scene, isn't he? He's always there, always in the right place at the right time. Adam Forshaw back at Elland Road then this weekend.
Yeah, I think he'll probably play, won't he?
With Plymouth, yeah. Imagine Darko JB cannot.
No, I don't think he'd be able to
almost,
play.
Almost certainly not.
Not cup tied, sorry. Ineligible.
But Leeds will rotate, and that always concerns me a little. So my prediction for Plymouth, I'm going to say 2-1 Plymouth.
Oh, interesting. Controversial. I'm going to go 1-0 Leeds. Tight game. Low on quality at the end of a three-game week, but get the job done.
Okay.
Right. Well, that's everything from the Inside Elland Road podcast this week. We'll be back, as I say, next week after the Norwich and Plymouth games. And hopefully it'll be a cheery episode, because you'll be able to tell straight away if Graham and I do have a second trip to Plymouth booked in the month of February by the tone of our voices. But no, this has been the Inside Elland Road podcast with myself, Joe Donoghue, and YEP chief football writer, Graham Smith. Bye for now. We'll
Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.